So today we're going to have a continuing story. Hello, Olivia. How are you? This story hasn't got many pictures in it. Would you like to come up and see the picture that is there, though? You don't have to if you don't want to.
Okay.
We'll move operations down here then. This is an old story written by a probably fairly unfashionable author now called Elizabeth Googe, who some of the older people in the congregation might remember. And it's about a boy called Ernie. And it's called The Lost Angel. We're going to read a bit of it now and a bit of it later. I just heard the other day that reindeers are female at Christmas time. Yes. So here's a picture of Ernie. You can see he's dressed up as an angel and he's got Wellington boots on. He's got gum boots on. The youngest angel was fed up. At 5 years old, he had never really understood what the nativity play was all about, though plenty of people had done their best to explain it to him. And the rehearsals, the practices had wearied him beyond endurance. The angels wore their wings at practice to get used to them, and his had nearly sent him crackers. The other children's wings stayed put fairly well, but his were always twisting or turning or falling off, and he was always in trouble, because when a lamb was put into his arms and he was thrust down to kneel in adoration at the foot of the manger, he wouldn't adore. Why should he? There was only a doll in the manger and they had a real baby at home. He couldn't see the sense in it. And when it came to the dress rehearsal and he was dressed in a white frock like a girl's and his newly washed yellow curls were fluffed out and he was made to look a fool, he decided to quit. And did so just before the scene where he had to kneel with the lamb in his arms and gaze at the china thing as though he loved it. That's the doll. How could he like it when they had a real baby at home? They ought to see the baby up at his place, and then they'd see the fools they were to make such a fuss over a doll like that. He roamed around to the back of the stage where it was dark, threw the lamb in a corner, pushed open a door and went out. No one saw him go. It startled him when he came out to find it was daylight still, for in the church hall where the practice was, they had darkened the windows to rehearse the lighting. He didn't know where he was, for until today they'd rehearsed the play at school. He stood in a yard. To one side of him there was a big church, and in front was an archway and a wall, and beyond that was the roar of London. London's a big city, it's much bigger than Wellington. On the day before Christmas Eve. He went to the archway and stood there at the top of a flight of steps looking down at the hurrying people. He was quite warm, but though it was a day with only an occasional gleam of sun, it was not cold and he had his winter vest on and his pants and his new Wellingtons, his gumboots. He had refused to take his boots off and go barefoot like the other angels, and as he was such a difficult boy at present, authority had not pressed him for fear of yells. Where now was home and mum? To the right or the left? He thought, as it happened wrongly, that they were to the right, and he decided he would go down. Step by step he descended, winged and glowing like Gabriel coming down from heaven with his good tidings of great joy. Once down on the pavement he trudged along, his wings crooked as usual, and his celestial robe lifted on each side to show his gumboots. He aroused a certain amount of curiosity and amusement but no concern, for he appeared to know where he was going and to be happy and content. But when he had passed by, he was not forgotten, for his hair was very yellow and his eyes most deeply blue. Some hearts ached at his passing, while others leapt with a sense of expectancy, but most didn't even notice him. These pushed and shoved the small angel, and once or twice he nearly fell down, but he went doggedly on, gave no sign of the mounting panic in his heart. Once or twice he whispered, "Mum, Mum," but even when he knew he was lost, he did not cry. He was a brave little boy. Well, he's out there in the city, and he doesn't know where he is. Now, the story tells us about Mrs. Rodney, who's an old lady, and she's going off somewhere for Christmas, and she calls a taxi. And she's driving through London streets in the taxi. Here we are. And they have to stop at a pedestrian crossing. You know, a pedestrian crossing with the white lines across the road, where it should be safe to cross. And her taxi is held up in the traffic. Mrs. Rodney, in her exasperation, let down her window and looked out to become instantly aware that almost everyone except her driver was looking out too, or down from the tops of the buses. Something or someone upon the pedestrian crossing was holding them enchanted. For a moment, so unlike herself was she today, she thought the whole of London was waiting and watching. The silence was so extraordinary. Standing up, she leaned right out and with her height was able to see over the low sports car and the courier boys in front of her and get a clear view of the crossing. The sun had just struggled out through the grey clouds and in a nimbus of glory, a small angel was drifting slowly across the street. The traffic banked up on either side of him like the waters of the Nile when the Israelites crossed over. An angel in London. An angel on a pedestrian crossing. Most people could hardly believe the evidence of their own eyes, but Mrs. Rodney instantly recognised him. It was the angel she had dreamed of last night. She could not mistake the little white robe, the fluffy wings, the yellow curls and rosy cheeks. No one moved or spoke until suddenly the taxi driver caught sight of the heavenly vision. He let out a yell, "My God, it's our Ernie!" The angel passed over, the traffic reared forward again, and the quiet moment was swept away as though it had never been. Beyond the crossing, the taxi jolted to a standstill beside the curb. The driver jumped out and wrenched the door open. "Sorry, lady, I must leave you," he said abruptly. "That was my kid and I must catch him." "Mine too," said Mrs. Rodney. "I'll help you." So they searched and searched, and it took them half an hour and they still hadn't found him. And they met back at the crossing. And the taxi driver says, "Ernie, he's in a play. The kids are rehearsing at the church hall this afternoon. Nativity play, they call it. Ernie's an angel. Fed up with it, he is. He's cut and run. But where does he think he's going to? Why didn't he go home? He's in a mood just now, is Ernie. The wife's just had a new one, and Ernie don't understand it. Been the only people on the beach for too long, and his mum and I proper took up with him. The wife's not strong yet." His voice suddenly snapped off and Mrs. Rodney realised that he was in too much distress to know what to do. "We must go back to the taxi and drive to the nearest police station," she said. "A lost angel is a matter for the police, I think." So they go to the police and the sergeant writes a notice. And at the top of the notice it says, "Lost one angel." And he puts a lot of information on and then he puts it on the notice board. So let's see what's happened to Ernie. There was a pedestrian crossing near Ernie's house, and when he saw the orange beacon looming up above him, his heart gave a leap of joy. He'd been feeling dreadfully tired and miserable, and now he was home. But when he'd crossed over to the other side, he wasn't where he thought he would be. Yet he still did not cry. He had inherited a great deal of grit from his father. And although any frustration of his will made him howl and roar, when things were really bad, he was silent. He turned right and went doggedly on for a couple of minutes until from sheer exhaustion he stumbled and went down on hands and knees. Scrambling up again, he turned sideways and there was a flight of steps. He was back again, he thought, at the place where they were doing the play. It was not home, but it was the next best thing. He would not mind being in the play any more now. He climbed up the steps, blind with fatigue, not noticing what was at the top, went through the wide swing doors, and inside was a warm, dim sort of cavern, so thickly carpeted that the man who was sorting letters inside a glass cubicle to the left did not hear Ernie enter, and he did not see the yellow head so far below his eyes. In front of Ernie, at the back of the cavern, was a oblong of light, the shape of a door. He stumbled towards it, and it wasn't a door, but an empty box full of light set up on end. He stumbled in and collapsed in a corner. It was warm and quiet, and above him in the box was a lamp like a star. He fell asleep, and the star shone down on him. Right, so let's find out. We've got Ernie in a small box full of light, haven't we? And we've got his dad looking for him with Mrs. Rodney. Okay. And now we've got another character called Colonel Anstruther, and he's an old man, He's been out for a walk, he's not very well, and he doesn't have a lot of money. And he walks past the police station, and guess what he sees? His sight, still so good that he only needed glasses for small print, cleared again, and he was able to bring the notice board into focus. Lost one angel. He's seen the notice. He was so astonished that he thought he must be making a mistake and put on his spectacles. Yes, an angel. He read the particulars carefully, registering the address of the child's home in his retentive memory, and was very greatly distressed. Half a lifetime ago, he had lost first a small son and then a young wife in India, and the loss had left him with a shy yet passionate love for all young children and their mothers. That a mother should be weeping for a lost son at Christmas was to him the very height of tragedy. He walked on slowly, and 20 minutes later he reached his club and paused beside the porter's cubicle in the foyer to ask if there were any letters. You can tell how old the story is. He thought there might be, as it was Christmas, but there was nothing, not even a card. He reminded himself there were few people left alive now to remember him. "They are all gone into the world of light," he quoted to himself. He thought he would go to the library and read for a while. The lift was beside the library, but as he walked towards it, he did not recognise the oblong of light that was confronting him. He was still a little confused after the queer turn he'd had in the street. It looked like a lighted porch leading to unimaginable glory. "The world of light," he murmured to himself and thought he would go in. But at the threshold of the porch, he was brought up abruptly, for there was an angel curled up asleep in the corner. A very small one. The starry light overhead shone down on the yellow head and fluffy crumpled white wings. The round cheeks were flushed with sleep and the long curved lashes lying on them were delicate as gossamer. The shock was so great that Colonel Anstruther was taken again with that rather painful breathlessness. But this time he felt better, and the first thing he noted was a stout little pair of gumboots protruding from beneath the celestial robe. The situation was clear, and he went over to the porter's cubicle and said, "Jackson, there's an angel in the lift. I shall be obliged if you will call me a taxi." Jackson had feared for some time that old Colonel Anstruther was getting a little muddled in his head. His fear now crystallised into certainty. "I'll see to it, sir," he said soothingly, and advanced with slow majesty upon the lift. "Caw," he said, coming to an abrupt halt. "Don't wake him," said Colonel Anstruther. "Call me a taxi and I'll take him to the police station. As I passed, I saw on the notice that there's an angel lost." His voice took on a note of military precision. "Don't stand there staring, Jackson. Have you never seen an angel before? Call me a taxi at once." Jackson did so, and they carried out the sleeping Ernie and put him on the old gentleman's knees in the cab. "Nice little chap," he murmured. And so Ernie gets to the police station, and the police get Ernie home. And then the next day, the house where there's Mum and Dad and Ernie and the new baby gets two visitors. Who do you think they might be? I think they're Mrs. Rodney and Colonel Anstruther. There was a knock at the door. Ernie's dad's head came round the door. "It's the old gal who lent me a hand yesterday," he said. "I told you, wants to see you and Ernie and the baby. Bring them along." "I'm feeding Roy," said Vera coldly. "It don't matter," said Bert. "Come as you are." Then meeting his wife's steely gaze, he realised this was one of the occasions when she was taking after her mother. "Come when you can, then. I'll take Ernie." And so they go in, and she is left feeding the baby, and it says she had been feeling exasperated, but now she felt at peace and looked down lovingly at the boy at her breast. What was it about him? He was quite an ordinary baby, yet people were perpetually coming in and out to see him. It was partly Ernie's doing, of course, always talking about the new baby, but it wasn't only that. She supposed it was because he was newborn just at Christmas. Roy had finished his meal, that's the baby, and was now at his best, satisfied, pink, sleepy and silent. She wrapped him in his shawl and took him in the crook of her arm. She was not nervous as she went down the passage, for an odd sense of assurance came to her as though she were a queen. She opened the door and came in smiling, and when she'd sat down in the chair that the old gentleman quickly vacated for her, she showed them the baby with a dignity and sweetness that Bert never afterwards forgot. Ernie behaved beautifully, clasping to his chest the woolly lamb that Mrs. Rodney had just given him, though he didn't care about it as much as Colonel Anstruther's model aeroplane. He kneeled down beside his mother and gazed at Roy with angelic and selfless adoration. It was a histrionic reflex action, for the woolly lamb was just like the silly thing they'd thrust into his arms during practice when they'd told him to look and smile and love the baby, and he wouldn't, it being China. But it touched Mrs. Rodney so much that she had to dive into her bag for a handkerchief. She recovered herself in a moment and was eloquent in admiration of Ernie and the baby. While Bert answered her, Vera looked up at the tall old man beside her. Their eyes met, and she knew that he understood her love for her baby as no one else did or ever would do, not even Bert. So Ernie, the lost angel, is not lost anymore, and he has a little baby brother. You've got a little baby brother, haven't you? From the Hebrew Bible, Isaiah 52:7-10. How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, your God reigns. Listen, you watchers, lift up your voices. Together shout for joy. When the Lord returns to Zion, they will see it with their own eyes. Burst into songs of joy together, you ruins of Jerusalem, for the Lord has comforted the people, has redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord will lay bare an holy arm in the sight of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth will see the salvation of our God. And the gospel reading is from John 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all humankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent nor of human decision, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from God, full of grace and truth. For the word in scripture, for the word among us, for the word within us, we give thanks.